You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in. We're going to talk Razorback baseball. They're playing Georgia tonight over at Baumwalker Stadium. We got Tom Hart from ESPN in studio with us. Bubba Carpenter here as always. Want to tell you that our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. Also brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with six times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. If you're just finding us, hope that you'll subscribe to our podcast wherever you're watching us, maybe on YouTube, might be on one of our social media channels. We're on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. Just search Whole Hog Sports. Tom Hart in town to call the game tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPNU. Georgia ranked number 5, Arkansas ranked number 17. And guys, this has become a bigger game, a bigger series. Like in the wake of what happened with Arkansas last week, beating Alabama, they're just three games off the lead with Georgia. Man, there is a big-time logjam in the conference.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see that change all year. Yeah. I mean, usually what happens, and I heard Kevin O'Sullivan use this phrase this weekend, I abide by it, it's not necessarily who you play, it's when you play them. Mm-hmm. Like, we've learned that over the years in this league especially. When injuries pop up, a starting pitcher's out for a weekend, whatever it might be, you might catch somebody when they're down. But unless you have the two worst teams remaining on your schedule, everybody's going to be scratching and clawing to try to get the crab to, you know, climb out of the bucket. I think it's going to be really tough. Because I think Georgia's a great team. Are they a conference champion-level team? We'll find out at the end of the season. They're there right now. Mm-hmm. But I think they come back to earth a little bit, and I think it just gets more muddled at the top.
Well, I think you kind of saw that last week when Florida beat them 2-3 in Athens. Florida's a hard team to figure out, aren't they? I mean, it's like they look like world beaters one week. They come back. I think they lost to Bethune-Cookman in the midweek this week. You just don't know what you're going to get with that team. Bubba, when you look at Georgia, I wonder what you think.
I think of a team with a lot of power. They always seem like a team. You look at their offensive numbers, and they're crazy. But if you look at their SEC only, I mean, there's some holes in there. They've made some outs in the SEC. Same with their pitching staff. It's not as good. Of course, no one's numbers are going to be as good, but the way they got off to an unbelievable start hitting home runs, it was crazy. It'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to the matchup tonight with Hunter Dietz, seeing what he can do against that lineup with that fastball-cutter combination. I think it's going to be fun to watch.
You got Joey Volchko going for Georgia, too. You know, Arkansas thought they had a pretty good chance at landing him. It felt like for a while it was going to be Arkansas or LSU when he transferred out of Stanford, then all of a sudden, here comes Georgia. I think when people talk about what SEC teams have the most resources, like people talk A&M, they talk Texas, they talk LSU, Vanderbilt because of the private school. Not enough people are talking about Georgia. When you go look at what they've done in the transfer portal over the last couple, 3 years, it's pretty impressive.
It's funny you mention that. I live in Atlanta. Georgia baseball for a long time has generally been in this league an afterthought. Now, there may be – if they catch the lightning right, there may be a comp coming to what Tennessee did under Vitello and how they turned into a national program. That possibility, that sleeping giant possibility is there. But it all comes down to the donors, right? And I was hanging out with some guys in Athens during a basketball game. And the night before the basketball game, they were talking about Ishikawa, this recruit they got from Seattle, this transfer portal kid, and how great he is, two-way player. And I thought, what are you doing talking about baseball during basketball season? This sure is – I mean, I appreciate it, but it sure is odd. And the guy says, man, I'm giving a lot of money to baseball. Like, we're making this thing work. We think we can win. And, of course, Atlanta's a hotbed for amateur baseball. They've been that close for a long time.
It's kind of interesting you mentioned Tennessee because, you know, the only two coaches who have made the move straight from college baseball to Major League Baseball – in the last 40 years were Tony Vitello now with the Giants, and then, of course, Wes did it when he left Arkansas to go to the Twins. And they were both on the same staff at Arkansas in 2017. And I keep telling people ever since, and I've mentioned this a lot since Tony took that job in San Francisco, I think that the fact that they were on staff together really shows Dave Van Horn's eye for coaching talent. And I mean, you even think about the guys that they have right now. I mean, I know that both of the coaches, maybe all three of the coaches they've got on staff now, they've turned down opportunities to go elsewhere. I think that, it's amazing when you think about the fact they were assistant coaches in Fayetteville 9 years ago, and you go on and look at what they've done.
Well, don't you think part of it, too, is, I mean, first of all, this is a great place to live and to work, and it's a great program, right? There's a lot of resources that Arkansas baseball has that other programs don't have, so you've got everything you want right here. Like, if you're Hobbs, like, why would you just use one example? Why would you pop out of here to take a lesser job that you may or may not win at and then, you know, restrict your growth? But I also think Dave Van Horn, outsider's view, gives these guys room to do their jobs and gives them room to work and room to coach. And not every head coach is like that in every sport, right? So you have the authority. If I'm in charge of the pitchers, like, it's my department. Like, this is what I'm doing. And I think that that'd be a great guy to work for.
I think that has a lot to do with Arkansas' success over the last several years since since we've had this staff together, because there's not a lot of movement. And you're right. He lets Hobbs coach the pitchers. Nate coaches the hitters. Now Bobby Warnes helps with that. And there's a big supporting staff. You know, you look at DJ Baxendale, Zach Barr, you know, Clay Goodwin, that have been with the team. I mean, they're part of it, and there's no change there, and so it's consistency. And I think that really helps a ton when you go to recruiting and just believing, getting guys to buy into the system. And I think Dave does a real good job of recruiting a good mix of freshmen, portal guys, and kind of mix them together. Where you look at what Georgia does, I don't know the real number. I've heard 24 portal guys. I don't know how many of them are really portal guys. I know they were heavy into the portal this year, and it's hard to build a culture. You know, I always talk about the Razorback baseball brand, and if you're bringing in 24 new guys a year, it's tough to do that.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to put your arms around it and say, this is who we are, the downside be damned, like what Kiffin has done on the football side. Like, we're just going to live in the portal, and culture is just about winning and putting the best guys on the field. It's harder to do in baseball really than it is when you're playing, you know, 13 football games.
But you know this, Bubba. Like the clubhouse. If they don't feel good about each other in the clubhouse, they're not going to win games.
Yeah, and I think that's where DVH does a good job in the staff, bringing in the right guys. Not just good players, but good character players. I'm an old school guy, and I don't like some of the stuff that goes on in college baseball these days. Dave doesn't allow that. I mean, and I think the culture of Razorback baseball, the clubhouse, you look at the team last year, won a lot of games because that team was close. They hung out together. I played on teams before that were real talented. We couldn't win because we had a bunch of individuals. I played on teams that weren't as good, and we couldn't get beat because we played as a team. We loved each other. We hung out together. And in baseball, I think that's so important. I don't know, you know, Lane Kiffin, you mentioned that. In football, is it as important as it is in baseball, the whole clubhouse structure?
Yeah, I think the importance of it, all the sports I cover, is when things are going well, none of that stuff matters, right? Because we're rolling, I'm doing well, you're doing well, we're crushing it, we're going to have a great steak dinner. What? It's when you hit a roadblock, right, and when things aren't going great, who's pointing fingers? Do I trust the guy next to me that he's not pointing fingers at me? And I, you know, of course, I was here for the Super last year, and I saw that same thing. Like, I mean, that was a – DVH does a fantastic job in a lot of different ways, but I think one of his values is only inserting himself as a head coach when he knows this is going to be impactful and it's needed. Like, I'm going to move the needle here, and I'm going to say, hey, buddy, we need to stop doing what you're doing and do it my way, right? Or, you know, knowing when to make a change, whether that's taking a guy out of the rotation or, you know, moving a guy in the infield. Like, there's a skill set to understanding the timing of all of that stuff. And, yeah, I think culture is a word that's overused, but I think chemistry is something that's important in all sports.
I think you saw Dave do that going into Alabama. He called out some of the veteran guys and said, look, we've got to get more production. And he's not afraid to call you out when you have to, plus make some changes. He made some drastic changes in the rotation and mixed the lineup up. That's gutsy, you know, halfway through an SEC season to still be making those moves. But, you know, I think he's a guy – I always talk about good coaches coach from the inside out. And I think Dave is a guy that's really good at that, knowing what he can get out of a player and when he can get it out. Just trying to get the most out of a player. I think he's the master of that.
He's really good at knowing their personalities and, you know, knowing which buttons are right to push. Tom Hart's still with us. Lance Cormier is going to be on call with him tonight on ESPNU. Have you had a Georgia game yet this year? Is this your first?
No, this will be my first. Okay. Had him a few times last year, but We were just talking. We're just at breakfast with Lance, and you know, it's funny with Wes being a pitching guy. Mm-hmm. Like obviously, that's his background. Ended up with the Twins, as you mentioned, when they won the division back to back years, and yet his team's known for the offense.
Right? Yeah,
like school record in home runs 2 years ago, leading the nation in home runs this year. The ballpark plays into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a fact. But the reality is, like this is a monster lineup where a lot of different guys can hurt you.
Daniel Jackson, maybe I don't know. Like, who is the leader for the Golden Spikes right now? Is it Daniel Jackson? I mean, like,
I think Brock Chulawski would be,
I'm sure.
Yeah, even though they lost midweek, and he struck out with the bases loaded. I just happened to be. By the way, how weird is it that I'm watching UCSB and UCLA on the Big Ten Network?
Yeah,
like that. I'm just so not used to that. But it is the year of the catcher. I mean, Georgia Tech, Arkansas, right. Georgia. Like, they're all over the place, and I think the value. From a pro perspective, you know, maybe that's where the pendulum has swung a little bit. I don't see as many Friday night dudes like that. You're just, okay, I'm going to be watching that guy mm-hmm. in the big leagues in 4 years. Like yeah. that guy's going to be a multi-year starter. I don't think the league has as many of those as we've seen in years past. And maybe just the cycle is we're seeing great catchers now.
You look at Jackson's numbers, though. They are really impressive. Bubba, have you got the offensive numbers from the SEC only games for him?
No, I don't. I couldn't get him to pull up. Okay. I efforted it for a long time this morning.
I mean, he was hitting home runs. Basically, I think he hit one or two on opening day. And, I mean, he's been on a tear, one of the best in the country. You mentioned the ballpark, Foley Field. Like, yep. It's got that short right field porch. How much do they take advantage of that, do you think? Because you look at left field, that's like the deepest left field in maybe college baseball. It's like 350 down the
line. But the ball carries really well to left.
Okay.
Like, that seems to be the wind pattern. Like, okay. Yeah, you look out there and you're like, who's going to hit one out to left? And they fly out the entire ballpark. I want to, by the way, I'm not just present, but I'm also a consumer.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about Joey Bell the other day.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, we were.
Did he finish the season or not?
Yeah.
Ben McDonald was on that team, is why I know the story, and I did some games in Athens with him. The SEC tournament that year was in Athens.
Okay.
Joey Bell is getting it from the frat guys who live in the greenhouse up the hill, uh-huh. and they're giving it to him pretty good, and apparently they crossed the line, and next thing they know, Joey Bell has scaled the fence. He's climbed Kudzu Hill. He found a 2x4 that was, like, you know, laying behind the fence, has it over his shoulder and climbing the hill to go beat the snot out of the frat Jeez. Guys. And that was the last time he was in an LSU uniform. But when you mentioned the SEC tournament, he didn't play after that. I realized that's right. The SEC tournament was at Foley Field that year.
Was it?
Yeah.
How about that? I didn't know that story. Do you know that story?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
That's awesome, I wouldn't want to be on the other end of Joey Bell with a 2x4.
No.
Joey Albert, whatever his name is, I'm running a long ways away.
Yeah, he's a scary dude.
What do you like? What's the hierarchy in the SEC right now? We talked about this a second ago, but like, I mean, it feels really hard to figure this out. Georgia, they got a 1.5 game lead over Texas and A&M, and I want to talk to you in a second about being down at College Station last week because that was a lot of fun to watch. You got Florida, who said we can't figure them out. And then it feels like everybody is either 8-7 or 7-8, basically, after that. You got LSU, South Carolina, Missouri. But, like, I don't know how to figure out this conference this year, because usually through 15 games, you do have a good feel of who the team to beat is. And I don't know that I feel like it's Georgia. Maybe I feel different about watching them this weekend or after watching them, but I don't know that I know that right now.
I'm with you. I'm anxious to see them as well. And I want to see, like, we know they can slug. By the way, home field advantage, you know, seems to mean less this year than it mm-hmm. has. Like, if you look at the records, the value for Georgia winning the league seems to be less in my eyes than others. They've been at home in the postseason. They haven't been able to get out of there. They were, and they haven't been a national seed a lot, but when they were a few years ago with Emerson Hancock, who's down to big leagues with the Mariners, couldn't get out. Last year, couldn't get out of their own regional. The year before, lost to NC State in the mm-hmm. Super at home. So, that doesn't seem to be a huge advantage for them like it is most other places. I think the hierarchy is going to continue to shift throughout the course of the season. I mean, we're at the midway point, and as unpredictable as the first half was, I don't see any reason that changes in the second half. So I think we're going to continue to see a lot of movement.
You know, talking about Georgia not being able to win at home, it reminds me a lot about what was being said about Arkansas here a couple of years ago. It's like they were here in 18, 19, they couldn't be beat. 21, they lose the Super to NC State. They lose a couple of regionals. People saying they can't win there. And then the status quo is the status quo until it changes.
Yeah.
They're back here last year, and they looked phenomenal in the postseason. I think a lot of it is just about the team and how the team kind of response to that pressure of being at home, but there is pressure of being at home. And I think maybe that's what you're seeing a little bit with teams this year. It's, hey, you know, I mean, you lose that first game and you start to pucker up a little bit, and it's sometimes it's hard to rebound from that.
I think that pressure's bigger when you're a better team.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You should win it easily. I had, 3 years ago, Tennessee, I think it was 3 years ago, at home against Notre Dame in a Super.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the Tennessee was one of the best regular season teams we'd seen.
Can we tell you our story about that series? We're in Chapel Hill. You were there, mm-hmm. and I was there. Middle of a Razorback game against North Carolina. I think that we had been in a rain delay, and maybe the game had just started.
It was actually a sun delay. It never rained. The sun was out the
anyway,
whole time.
My favorite.
And yeah. I mean, just like this spontaneous cheer start. And, you know, Arkansas travels really well when they go on the road. And so there's a big crowd there in Chapel Hill. This huge cheer, hog call. I think it's like in the middle of a game. Like somebody's throwing a pitch, and all of a sudden, it's like, what is going on? Oh, Tennessee just got bounced by Notre Dame. It was – because, you know, in 21, Arkansas was the number one. It was like Tennessee in 22 was the same thing that happened to Arkansas in 21. They're number one the entire year, and the fan bases are talking at each other on Twitter the whole year. And so it was like their chance to, hey, all the crap that we heard from the Tennessee fans last year, you're going to hear it now after the same thing happens to you.
I don't know why. It feels like that happens more often in baseball than we see in other sports. Maybe it's the pressure and the promise in the same event, like knowing what's on the line, knowing how close you are to Omaha. And it's not a neutral site. It's not like playing in the, you know, March Madness where you're playing in San Antonio or Oakland or Tampa. Like, no, we're at home, and I know my routine. When I walk out of this locker room, I'm going to see my parents in the parking lot, and where this is going to be hugs or tears. I think it's finality of the whole thing. But, yeah, it does seem like no matter and it's something to watch with UCLA this year, number one team in the country. They won't get tested much in the Big Ten. They just had their 26-game win streak ended in a midweek loss. But there's going to be pressure on them to live up to this gaudy record once they get in the postseason.
So take a team like UCLA. I don't want to put you on the spot. Put them in the SEC.
Yeah.
How good would they be? Because I watched them play USC last weekend.
So,
and I don't view them like I view SEC teams. SEC teams are bigger, more physical, they're faster. Give me your opinion.
So I only watched that one UCLA game. I'm actually going to the West Coast because I've got UCSB and Irvine on Sunday, so I'll be out there this weekend. So I'm. This is like the one time a year, you know, where I kind of start to dabble in the West Coast stuff. I think UCLA, it's hard to think of them as a Big Ten team, but let's just break it down by Big Ten, right? I think they're the class of the Big Ten. I think they're far and away the best. They have the number one overall pick in the draft. They've got great pitching. They've got a coach who's won a national championship before. Like, they have all those pieces and a veteran team that was just in Omaha. So I think they're well put together. Is it a different brand of ball? Is it less physical? Yeah, it's, you know, they're not going to hit 100 home runs, A, because they're less physical, and B, because the ballparks and the weather, everything's a little bit different out there. Compare them to, like, a Nebraska. And Nebraska's having a great year, and they're going to get a lot of momentum as they continue to pile up wins in the Big Ten. And Will Bolt was at A&M as an assistant and played there, yada, yada. Or, pardon me, played at Nebraska, was at A&M with Rob Childress as an assistant. I think Nebraska's the team where you're like, and maybe even USC, because USC bolstered their resume with a lot of easy, non-big RPI wins early in the season. So I know why you say that, and I think that fits teams like USC and Nebraska out of the Big Ten. I don't think it fits UCLA because of the pedigree and because of the talent in the middle of that lineup with the number one overall pick.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. I also know there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to try to just make it back to Omaha. And I don't know. Here's where I think the biggest difference is. I don't know that teams like that, and I'm stereotyping, are built for the crucible that is a Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, super regional in front of 8, 10, 12, 15,000 people, which is what a lot of those teams have to do when they come here or anywhere in the SEC to play super. They shrink really quick because they understand how big the sport is to the people in this region. When UCLA is number one team in the country, maybe playing in front of 1,500?
Yeah, it didn't look great. Like crowd, 1,800? Anyone understands. They're playing USC, and it looked empty.
Arkansas played a super regional in Tempe in 2010. Arizona State was the number one overall seed that year. And I was there, and it was a Sunday night. Arizona State had won a 12-inning game on Saturday night, so they had a chance to clinch, and they eventually did. They won two 12-inning games. There were 1,000 empty seats in a ballpark that seats maybe 2,500. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, if we're back home or we're in Mississippi or wherever, like there are people, there are 2,000, there are more people outside the gates trying to get into the stadium than there are people in the stadium here. It's an amazing contrast between what we see here and what you see out in a pro market like that.
So, not to hijack the conversation, but this is, in my mind, a fascinating discussion to have. We're probably going to have a major league work stoppage next year, right? Mm-hmm. At best, maybe they're playing Major League Baseball in late June, mm-hmm. maybe later than that. There is a huge opportunity for the growth of college baseball next calendar year. And can it grow much more in the South? We're doing pretty well, like in the SEC and even, you know, Florida State and some ACC schools. But how do you get those other pockets? How do you get the Midwest Big Ten, the West Coast and Southern California? How do you embrace those fan bases? And I'd be fascinated to see how creative leadership gets. I'd be talking right now if I was Arkansas about playing. This is the fine line, so it's open for discussion. I don't think we should take home conference games away from what sells college baseball as being so great, which mm-hmm. is the atmosphere here, the atmosphere at A&M, pick it, LSU. But I would love to see, and it hurts my heart because I'm a guy that hates neutral site games, cherry pick a Friday or a Saturday night from that big series, play it in Arlington where so many Arkansas fans go, play an A&M series in Houston, LSU can play a game in Houston, Georgia can play a game at Truist. Find ways, I mean, Arkansas could play a game at Kauffman Stadium, mm-hmm. right? Find ways to engage those major league fans who are only exposed to this great sport in Omaha, who are looking to feed their baseball diet and want to buy a ticket and want to go to Kauffman Stadium and see the fireworks. They want to go. They want to take the family, but there's no Major League Baseball. And that will probably be the case all of April, all of May, and maybe a good chunk of June, depending on what happens there.
I think you could do that and still have it at the college ballpark. So I think what makes college baseball so cool is that, you know, you turn on a pro game and you're not seeing 18 guys give it their all every night. I just don't think you are. You watch college baseball and it feels like you are more often than not, fewer games, but there's something about playing at home and playing in your, you know, like just playing for your team. And I know transfer portal and everything has changed this, but there's a passion to a college game. Like, we're going to see tonight. It's going to be 7 o'clock on a Thursday night. You're going to have a lot of people who got to be at the office early in the morning. They're still going to be out there, you know, because this is a big time game. It's not your normal, it's not your Thursday night game that you turn on in Major League Baseball. You know, and I think that, you know, ESPN, whoever, if they would amplify that a little bit more, I think it would grow the game a lot, because to me, college is about the, like, kind of the pageantry of it, as opposed to where Major League is about the individualism.
Yeah, and it's about the routine. And I think, you know, from a fan perspective, it's about the routine. Like, if you're a Braves fan, you're turning on the game every night at 7 o'clock. Like, that's just part of your routine. And I'd be fascinated to learn, like, how can we reach those fans? I die for the atmosphere that we get at these college ballparks. So it hurts my heart to say it, but I think if you can. There's a difference between selling 12,000 tickets and 35,000 tickets with that. I don't know. I mean, like, do you think major league fans who otherwise are in a tunnel and don't think of college baseball can get introduced to the sport in a way if you took it to them, or better off if you tried to get them to come to you?
I don't think you're going to get them to come to you. I think you're onto something with us going to them, like us going to Kauffman Stadium. We're going to Arlington. You know, you look at Globe Life, Matt, the crazy atmosphere, what, 25,000?
Oh, it's amazing.
And that's in February.
Yeah. I mean, it's opening weekend. Yeah. They are smart. They put Arkansas and TCU against each other on Saturday night, and they know that they're going to be counting cash.
Yeah.
Maybe the answer is just throwing pasta at the wall. Maybe the answer is what we're used to in midweek games. Now, all of a sudden, we take those February tournaments, mm-hmm. and Arkansas and TCU meet on a Wednesday night in Arlington, and you keep your conference stuff at home.
Do you know how you could be a hero to every Razorback fan? If you could go to your bosses at ESPN and say, will you go get these rights away from Flow Sports?
Yeah.
I mean, they'd build you a castle here.
I hear you. We deal with the –
He's already a hero.
We deal with the same
bigger hero. Yeah.
Programming, listen, here we talk about the variety and talent in this league. The hardest job is the programmers, who try to make the schedule in advance of the season and try to figure out who's going to be good and who's not, right? We can't even figure it out, and we're in the halfway through the season. I'll be back here for the Ole Miss game on Sunday in a couple weeks, and a couple weeks ago you're like, well, that's a dog, and now it's shifted again. So it's hard to, that part's hard to figure out.
But they put two Arkansas-Missouri games on television.
At Missouri?
At Missouri. Just saying that.
I'm just going to sip my coffee.
Tom, you tell us how you're doing on time. We'll sit here and talk your ear off. Tell us if you need to get out of here. I want to ask you about being in College Station last week because that was – that. I was in College Station for the last regular season series that Schloss had there, and they beat Arkansas, and, man, that was a lot of fun being there. I mean, it was just – Bubba can tell you great stories about playing down there in College Station a long time ago. But I think about how electric that weekend was. And then you amplify that by the fact that Schlossnagel is coming back with Texas, and you got people sleeping outside, camping outside for, you know, days on end trying to get into these games. I mean, tell us what was that like being like? It looked like a lot of fun on TV, and I have to imagine that it was even better being there in person.
We actually had a chance to do that same series in Austin last year. And so the energy was ramped up there, but there wasn't as much animosity and vitriol as, of course, he comes into Aggieland. Mm-hmm. I kind of joked about it, but I don't think I'm far off. Like, from an Aggie perspective, what hurt them so much is, like, he was a mercenary when they hired him from TCU.
Yeah.
But you conveniently put that to the side. Yeah. He's our guy. He's taking us to Omaha. We're finally going to get to where we need to go. And what they, you know, he's finally going to get us a national championship. So it's the end of the spectrum, right? In their eyes, he went from savior to Satan, and it happened in about 24 hours. And then to come back a year later for the series this weekend. They were amped up. I think it was more fans than players, although there were certainly a few players. Because when that staff left, and this is natural, and there's nothing wrong with this, but they tried to recruit everybody from College Station to come to Austin. And a good chunk of guys said, thanks, no thanks. Mm-hmm. We're happy here. We're Aggies. We're going to stay here. And I can, you know, commend them for doing that. So I think it was more the fan base than the players. You don't need to add much kerosene to that rivalry. Mm-hmm. Like, that is real. And the dichotomy of where A&M fans think that Texas – thinks of them, what Texas fans think of A&M, and then to steal a guy and them have success. And so it was cathartic for both the A&M fan base to sweep the series, even though they had a rain out on Sunday. But also it was a huge win for Michael Early, who struggled last year with preseason number one, and they didn't make the postseason. So that was – and by the way, as things flip every weekend, now A&M's probably hosting. Like, if the season ended today, they were hosting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at them right here. They're number 13 RPI. They got a good strength of schedule. That's only going to keep going up as they play more SEC games. They got a really good offense, too. I mean, that may be the best offense in the league. Talking about Georgia, A&M, I think, is right there in the conversation with them.
Yeah, two guys at the top of the order, Caden Sorrell, Gavin Grohovac. Just, you know, Sorrell's top five in the country in everything, home runs, RBIs, like a real run producer and hits for a high average. And Grohovac's one of the hottest hitters in the country.
I love watching Grohovac. Just we talked about him ad nauseum his freshman year. He's so much fun to watch.
So if you look at, like, all this jumbled mess right here, all the 8-7 teams, the 7-8 teams, who do you see as, like, your 2022? And you probably can't read my writing.
Well, no, I can't. I can. But what's funny about it is when I saw Mississippi State like 3 weeks ago, I thought they're guaranteed to host.
Yeah,
like,
too. Same here.
Guaranteed to host, probably national seed. They're going to Omaha. And now what? So they still have that same potential. They've got to get healthier in the rotation. Florida certainly has the talent, you know, like you guys saw in the Georgia series. And I don't see anything wrong with Texas that, you know, not facing your rival doesn't fix. So they're not in that jumbled group. So I think Texas probably ends up higher than they are right now. I would not be surprised if they win it. And of that, golly, I mean, it would be Arkansas and Mississippi State would be the two that I would pick from that logjam of teams. Vandy has a lot of holes. Tennessee has a lot of holes. Kentucky is Kentucky, same type team, speed, pester you, but you know, and they've had to deal with injuries. So, yeah, I'll take the easy way out and go Arkansas and State.
Tom, let's get you out of here on this, unless you want to sit around and talk about UAPB on Tuesday night at Dickie Stevens Park.
Logan Stout still coaching them?
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ever look at his bio? Most personable coach in college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, I mean, he's like an author. He is a team owner. He's a motivational speaker. It's kind of crazy. How about this? You come to Baum a lot. You go around. You go to Baton Rouge. You go to College Station. There are so many great places in this league to watch baseball. It is so much fun. I'd say probably 7 or 8 probably best environments in college baseball are in the SEC. What stands out about Fayetteville? I don't want you to say it's the best because I don't want to put you in trouble with your Aggie friends.
No, that's a fair question.
But what stands out about it?
Yeah, 100. I appreciate that question. It's the knowledge of the fan base. You know, I grew up in Missouri. I thought it was always cheesy when they called the Cardinals fans best fans in baseball. But they know the game. Mm-hmm. And by knowing the game, you appreciate the little stuff. Mm-hmm. This fan base has that over most, if not all, fan bases.
Yeah.
I think the biggest – what I really love about this, and this kind of doesn't apply completely everywhere, but it seems to be a sense of community at the ballpark, mm-hmm. right? Even if it's just the beer mug hats, right? Like, it's not one section doing it. It's not 6 dudes. It's everybody. Like, there's a sense of community that you're hanging out with your people when you're at the ballpark if you're an Arkansas fan. A&M was amazing, but it was a student section that was driving the whole thing, mm-hmm. you know, from a certain perspective. LSU is great. And if you want to tailgate and have some jambalaya, like, that place is awesome. So I think that's the difference for me. Every place in the SEC, and I say this about football too, every place is amazing if you've got a top 10 game.
Yeah.
What separates is what happens when you're a top 10 team and you're hosting a nobody. Are people still showing up?
You talk about St. Louis, and I think that's a great comparison because I've made that comparison between the Razorback fan base and what I see with the Cardinals. And you think about it, I mean, probably most men over 50 who grew up in Arkansas and who are going to those games, they fell asleep with Jack Buck playing on KMOX underneath their pillow,
yeah.
you know, at night. And so I think that there's a natural kind of correlation between the Cardinals and the Razorbacks.
So you're saying DVH is Whitey Herzog? Is that what we got?
Is that what I'm saying, Bubba?
It sounded like
yeah, that's not, no, I think you're right. I think you're right. And it's easy to romanticize about, you know, the nostalgia of the past, but that was a way where baseball reached me,
yeah.
right? It was on the radio more often than that. You didn't have every single game on TV. You couldn't just sit home on your couch, cable TV, and throw everything on. And I think the other part of that, which would be an interesting dynamic, and I don't know how many this applies to, is Arkansas baseball, you guys know way better than I do, seems to draw from the entire state, mm-hmm. right? It's not just who's in town. That's Cardinals baseball, right? Cardinals baseball draws from a wider geographic area than maybe any other team next to the Braves, and it was all based on their superstations. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said for, hey, we're going to make a trek. We're going to drive from the other side of the state for this baseball series this weekend. You don't get that everywhere.
Bubba, you want to give him like a random player to drop during the broadcast tonight?
Oh, yeah.
A random what?
Random Razorback player for him to drop in the broadcast tonight. We're going to give him a challenge.
It's got to be somebody. Like, it can't be Dallas Keuchel, right? We got to go like deep into the weeds.
Deeper? Boy, that's a tough one. Bubba Carpenter.
I feel like we talk about Bubba every TV game.
No, but that's a tough
remember
one.
Remember when your son made the catch at Hoover?
I do remember that, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's awesome. I still have a picture in our game room. A buddy of mine printed it out, showed the catch, and then he showed him jumping into Crystal, his mom's arm. The slow motion jump into the arm.
Yeah.
The coach in me loved the catch. The dad in me loved the hug.
Yeah,
so
I love
cool.
that.
Yeah. So
good crowd tonight?
Good
like,
moment.
Like bursting at the seams or Thursday night? Pretty good.
Thursday night, 7 o'clock, I say probably 75% full.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Who's your player? You're not getting off. No.
How far back you want to go?
Last 20 years.
I mean, for me, it would be someone like a Kevin Copps. You know, I'm thinking more from 2018 when I started doing radio.
I mean, we could always go like Brian Walker.
There you go, Brian Walker. Did you ever see the Brian Walker Ole Miss video?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still make fun of that all the time. Every time I see someone lean into a pitch. Brett Eibner.
There you go. Brett Eibner tonight.
Done.
Got it.
I can give you the Brett Eibner. Brett Eibner threw the last, I think he threw the last nine inning one hitter against Georgia when they were number one in 2009 down in Athens.
By the way, this is how television production works.
I think that's how that went. Look at Arkansas's game notes. Last time it happened, I think that's it.
Got it against the team that you're playing tonight.
Like, excellent.
That's an easy way to work into the broadcast.
Big time outing by Brett Eibner that night.
I talked to some of my scouting friends with the Yankees. I'm like, Brett Eibner is the man. He's awesome. And so they went and watched him at LSU. He hit a ball over the scoreboard at LSU. So I'm all excited about it. And we're texting. I'm like, well, he's a little long on his backside. I don't know how he's going to do in pro ball. And I'm like, gosh, I guess I'm clueless. Because to me, I thought Eibner was just the man. So, like, big moment, you know, game on the line, big home run. You know, I think of that Virginia home run he hit. Yeah, so I was a big Brett Eibner fan.
There it is. Last nine-inning one-hitter, Brett Eibner, April 19th, 2009 at Georgia. It was a Sunday. He was their Game 3 starter.
There you go.
It's amazing, by the way, the information that's now available to those scouts and to everybody. I just wanted to pull this up because I knew you'd be here. Like Hunter Dietz, I can tell you the likelihood of him throwing any pitch on any count this season with everything we have. And the information that's now available, and this is the same stuff that, you know, Hobbs has and that Georgia has, but if he gets into a 3-0 count, he's thrown nothing but a fastball all year. Okay, no big surprise.
Right.
But nothing besides a fastball. 2-1 count, fastball 59% of the time, slider 22% of the time. The information that's now available and that break down from a scouting report perspective, and then I can break it down left, right, the whole thing. It's fascinating.
It is. It's incredible. I don't know. So we stood on deck and watched the guy warm up. Okay, he's got a fastball, slider, change. That's it. That was our technology back in the day. I don't know if I would have done well with that much stuff. Now, you get in the pro bar, you got a little bit more, but I'm thinking just college. With that much information, I think I would have been mind screwed. I'd have been, okay, 2-1, I bet you he's going to throw this. And then if he doesn't, I'm done, you know. And so I don't know. It's like paralysis by analysis. Well, I don't know if I would want that much information.
One of the best hitters we've seen come through this league the last handful of years, especially big league success, was Pete Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he was there, I was fascinated by his approach, and I asked some detailed questions. And every question I asked was kind of met with, yeah, maybe. And finally somebody stopped me and they go, the dude spends all day watching the Cartoon Network. And then he comes here and he mashes. That's what he does. That's as far as the thinking goes.
That's
like
great.
He is not breaking down film and looking at any tendency. He's getting in the batter's box and he's gonna mash it. Then he sets a, you know, rookie home run record. Like, it works for some dudes, right?
Right. Yeah.
Tom, great having you in here.
Yeah,
man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, good luck on your call tonight.
Appreciate
you can hear him
tonight.
With Lance Cormier tonight on ESPNU at 7:00. Bubba and I'll be right back.
All right, thanks to Tom Hart for being in here. A reminder, our baseball podcast sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a local shop that's been family-owned for three generations. They've built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way. That kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident. We're also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville, or online at bentonvilleglass.com. And a reminder, if you would, subscribe, rate, like, whatever you got to do to our podcast on all these different platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. You can find us on our social media channels as well. Arkansas beat UAPB on Tuesday night, 12-2, down in North Little Rock. I was there. Bubba didn't go. Although, you know, I was talking to Phil before the game, and he said that because his call, the radio call, was being used for the television component of that game, he said, you were really missing out. He said, because the television is the color man's, it's kind of his platform. It was built for the color analyst. And he said people were going to be missing out that you weren't on there.
Yeah, I wish I could have gone. I went a couple years ago. And, like, I've done some stuff. Every once in a while, I'll go on the SEC guys. If Troy's gone or something, they'll have me on for, like, an inning or two. And it's so much easier because I actually have time to talk. And, like, I can describe things and talk about things. We're on the radio. You've got so many seconds between pitches. And so it's like you got to have little short sentences.
Yep. It was a late game. late night. You know, we had those tornado warnings in Fayetteville. I was told the team actually had to pull off of the interstate somewhere along I-49, I think maybe West Fork, because they had to sit there and wait out the tornado warning that was going through Fayetteville on their way back up here. It's such a, you know, North Little Rock is a home game for Arkansas, but it's still a road game. And Dave was talking afterward about how tired the guys were. I mean, this was the eighth time they played away from Baum in 9 games. I'm sure they're going to love this, being able to be back here for the 3 games tonight, and then they play Missouri State here on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited about this weekend. And I mean, as a baseball player, you're a creature of habit, so there's nothing better than being at home. You know, you've got your clubhouse, you've got your food, you've got just your routine, and it's so much easier to stick to it when you're at your home ballpark. There's nothing better as a hitter than stepping up to your home batter's box, stepping into the box, the background's familiar, the batter's eye. Mm-hmm. And as a pitcher, you know, your mound always feels better than a road mound. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be the guys are going to be excited to be back home.
Colin Fisher gave him a good start on Tuesday night. And this is what I've been thinking they should do for about 4 or 5 weeks now. I think it's become apparent probably for, I would say, 3 starts before Fisher was actually taken out of the starting rotation, that it probably was not going to last all year for him in that number 3 role. And I just think he's been so good in his career at giving them those good starts on Tuesday night where you know that the other team's probably not going to score more than a run if he's out there for 3 or 4 innings. It'll be interesting to see what his usage is like this weekend against Georgia, because you know they're going to want to pitch him some. But what that usage is like and what the availability is like when they play Missouri State here on Tuesday night, because that's a big game against Missouri State. You talk about RPI. Obviously, Arkansas wants to get a little bit of payback for what happened up in Springfield a couple of weeks ago. I think that there's a potential for him to be a Tuesday starter for the Tuesday games they have left.
Yeah, I think so. And then I think they're still going to use him on the weekends. I mean, you think how much confidence Dave has in him. He put him in Saturday at Alabama in a 1-run game.
Yeah.
It was 5-4 when they brought him in. So they still have confidence in Colin Fisher, and I thought he did a good job of throwing strikes. You know, I think Dave referred to it in the post game. And, you know, the key against UAPB is don't walk them. Mm-hmm. You know, when you walk them, they score. So, and Colin Fisher's typically a strike thrower.
TJ Pompey got SEC Player of the Week this week. He had a couple of, I don't know if I'd call him bad at bats, but he went chasing some pitches for strikeouts against UAPB his first 2 times up, and you're thinking, oh boy, you know, like, but he came back. I think he got a walk maybe in his 3rd at bat, and then he got a hit. So he bounced back. And then, you know, the thing I think that is, there's really 3 players that I think were key at Alabama. Damian Ruiz coming back, that adds a lot of versatility to the lineup, a lot of things you can do in terms of who you put in and who you take out. But the other thing that I thought was big for them was you've got Pompey and Aloy, who have been so strikeout prone this year. It just looks like their takes are a lot better. And you saw this with Cujillo against UAPB when he went 3-for-4 with 4 RBI. He's taking pitches, and then it's getting him the pitch to hit in that 2-2 count, in that 3-2 count.
Yeah, I think good hitters are defined by what they don't swing at. You can tell a lot about a hitter. I talk about it a lot on the air with Phil. How a guy takes a pitch says a lot about his swing.
Yeah.
How he takes is how he was getting ready to swing. And so you can read a lot into that. And I think the key for Pompey and Aloy both is just stay in the zone. I know it sounds easier than it is, but Aloy's had a lot better at bats. He's not chasing that slider off the plate. Mm-hmm. And even his takes are like confident takes. Like he's taking it like he saw the ball right out of the pitcher's hand. He knew, yes, no, I don't want that pitch. And that's good to see.
Arkansas is going to go with the same rotation this weekend against Georgia. They're going to go Dietz on game 1, which is tonight. They'll throw Cole Gibler tomorrow. They're not going to name a starter for game 3. They'll just see who's available. I think the big key for this team is, number one, you got to get innings out of your starters, and we know that. And it's going to be really interesting to see both for Dietz and for Volchko from Georgia tonight. You know, they both have thrown a lot of pitches here of late. Like Volchko, I think, has gone over 100 in 2 of his last 3, and then in the other one he went 96. And, of course, Dietz, he's gone 106 and 107 pitches the last 2 weeks. What is their arm like on a short week? You know, are they going to be able to get to 100, or do you have to take them out after 80, 85, 90? That's going to be really interesting to watch tonight.
I don't think it affects Dietz because you've seen him. He's a big, strong kid. he can be on his 105th pitch, he's still throwing 95, 96. So I don't think it's going to affect Hunter Dietz. Now, the other guy, I don't know much about him yet. I'll let you know when game time rolls around.
And then Arkansas, they need to find, you know, I think that they've kind of identified what I would call kind of like a core, maybe core four in the bullpen. I mean, I think you got Gackle. You've got, let's see here, McIlvain. Help me out because I'm drawing a blank. There you go, Parker Coyle. Steele Eaves, I think he's in that, you know, circle. Colin Fisher, I guess he's kind of in that circle too, so maybe five. I still think that they need to, like who is that next reliever? Because I feel like they need a little bit more length, one or two more relief pitchers to step up. I thought how Mark Brissy threw Tuesday night was really encouraging because the thought process 4 weeks ago was that he was going to be one of those that was, you know, one of the key relief pitchers who came out. And then for like six outings, it just went totally haywire for him. And he talked to me about it afterward. He said, yeah, it's been really bad. He said, hopefully I got that out of my system, and now everything's going to be good moving forward. But outside of Brissy, I mean, like who else do you think could maybe step up and be one of those relievers?
I keep saying Cooper Dossett's a guy that's got the stuff to be in the back end of the bullpen, you know, mid-upper 90s fastball. The cutter is elite and a good slider. I think he's a guy that could help. But I've been saying all along, we need another righty to step up, but we really don't need another righty. I mean, it'd be nice, but look at our lefties. Our lefties can all get righties out. I mean, you got Parker Coyle with that little cutter, you know, 85, 86 miles an hour. He carves righties up. You saw the last pitch he threw at the Alabama game, down in, the strikeout. Yeah. And then you've got McIlvain throwing 96, 97, top of the zone with a cutter and a good slider. So I don't know, but it would be nice to get one more guy. Brissy might be that guy. Cooper Dossett might be that guy. I thought Kretcher's performance was a little disappointing. I really wish he could figure it out because he's got elite stuff, but you got to fill it over the plate.
You know, and I mean, and that's kind of been the issue with him is that he's been really struggling throwing it over the plate the last, several outings, really. I wonder how much of that was nerves. You know, he's a Little Rock guy playing in North Little Rock. First time that he's had a chance to do that. It was – A lot of pitches outside the zone. Like, I think he had back-to-back walks and nine pitches, and there were a couple of wild pitches in there. One of them, wild pitch, it goes off that I don't know if it hit the net or I don't know if it hit the concrete at the base of the net, but, man, it shot right back out to Helfrich, and he threw out a guy at second base. You don't get that with a ball that goes off rubber padding.
Right, yeah, I saw that on the highlights. And another guy, you mentioned Steele Eaves. In the Alabama series, I swear I saw him throw a spike curveball or a knuckle curve, whatever you want to call it. And that's something I haven't seen him throw. Now, it's hard to tell in the broadcast, but I could have swore I saw a knuckle sticking up on that pitch when he threw it in. That could be another pitch for Steele because Steele's a sinker slider guy, so everything's kind of the same speed. He needs something, and it's more, you know, it's more horizontal left to right. He needs something that's got a little more depth on it, a little bit slower to get him off of – to get the hitters off of the sinker slider. If you're a two-pitch guy, they better be two elite pitches because as a hitter, if I've only got two pitches to worry about, I feel pretty good about my chances. So him adding that other pitch in there, I'm going to talk to Hobbs tonight and find out or talk to Steele, and I want to know if I saw what I think I saw. And the action of the pitch said that it was something different.
You mentioned Daniel Jackson, his SEC numbers. You think that there's a little bit of a – there's a contrast there in that and what he did in non-conference play.
Well, if you look in conference only, he's hitting 350, which is good. He's only got two home runs in conference play, 13 RBIs. And if you look at his strikeouts, he's leading the team in strikeouts. He's got 21 punch-outs in SEC play. That's in 15 games. That's a lot of punch-outs right there. He's leading the team. So, you know, his SEC numbers – aren't anything like his out-of-conference numbers, which is expected. I mean, you've seen some good pitching, and, you know, you look, they've seen Florida. They've seen a lot of good pitching stats. So, but, yeah, I think if you look at his number, they're slightly inflated from what the SEC numbers are.
Yeah, you know, when you got a team that is so predicated on power like Georgia is, and I'm not talking about just the home runs because they hit a ton of doubles and triples too, but when that's not working for you, can you piece together the singles? I think that's going to be really interesting to see from them this weekend. It's like, can they piece together maybe the two-run inning. That's going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, their average in conference is 278. Ours is 234. So they're getting some hits in conference. I think if you look at the wind, if you look ahead tonight, the wind's blowing out of the south, which is right in right field. Tomorrow night, there's like an 18 or 19 mile an hour south wind blowing in. So who does that benefit the most? Does it benefit us? In conference, we've got 20 home runs. They got 25 if you look conference only. So I don't know who that really benefits. And then if you go on into Saturday's game, wind's blowing out at like 15 miles an hour out of the north. So that's straight out. So you're like, okay, will that be a more offensive day? So you just kind of look at it and say, okay, who does that benefit most with the wind coming in?
It's interesting. Yeah, you look at the stats from these two teams, and I know you look at the conference-only stats. I've only got the overall stats right here side by side. Georgia's stats are far superior to Arkansas. Really, the only place that you would look at Arkansas and say that it's a better team than Georgia, and it's only slightly, is in their pitching numbers. Arkansas's got an ERA of 4.01, which that sounds high, but if you look at it, it's actually like a top 25 mark in the country. Georgia's at 4.54, but you know, offensively, Georgia's about 2.5 more runs per game than Arkansas. Batting average, OPS, all of these are significantly higher. Like Georgia's a 1069 OPS, Arkansas's an 842. Sometimes you get these teams that can really mash it. They can't play defense. That's not the case with Georgia. They field 983, which is one of the best marks in the country. So you look at that and you'd say, on paper, Georgia should win this series. It's the home field advantage part of this. And does that become more of a factor in the second half of the season, or the conference season, than it was in the first half of the season, that I think is going to be the key for Arkansas?
Well, I would have said normally, yeah. Home field advantage is huge, especially Baumwalker. I mean, we in the past we didn't lose at Baumwalker.
Yeah,
it's been a little bit different this year, so that's kind of left to be said.
But you look where Georgia's won. I mean, they won at A&M, mm-hmm. They swept at Mississippi State. Those are two either of those, you know, just by themselves, like that's going to get your attention. You put them together with the way those two teams have played. I know Mississippi State's struggling a little bit. But like those really get your attention, I think, this year.
Yeah, and I think I like where we're trending. I think we're coming into this series feeling really good after the sweep at Alabama. They lost 2 out of 3 against a good Florida team,
mm-hmm.
Where they didn't hit any home runs, which doesn't surprise me with that Florida pitching staff.
Yeah,
I'm still so impressed with their bullpen, the way they just keep pulling guys out of that bullpen, throwing upper 90s to 100 with, you know, 93 mile an hour sliders. Mm-hmm. So. That's a really good pitch staff. But, you know, it was funny. I listened to Kyle Peterson this morning on a radio show, and he said that he kind of – I guess he really didn't really go out on a limb, but they asked him his opinion of the series, and he said, well – and I think it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. He said if Georgia doesn't hit any home runs this weekend, Arkansas will win the series.
That's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good bet, right?
I wanted to run that by Tom and see what he got his thoughts on it. Didn't get a chance.
Dave Van Horn was talking about it after the game Tuesday night. He said they've got 98 home runs. He said I'd be happy if they still had 98 when they left on Saturday. One thing about Georgia, I will say this before we get out of here. I always wonder about them because they do not schedule very difficult in non-conference. Like their non-conference here, I got their it is the number 231 non-conference strength of schedule. I always wonder if that catches up with them as the SEC season goes along, that they didn't really, you know, and I don't know if this is, sometimes it might just be that the teams they thought were going to be good, kind of like Arkansas thought Stetson and Xavier were going to be good this year, and neither of them has really quite lived up to that. But I wonder if that catches up with Georgia some as the season goes along, because this is kind of something that we've seen from them for a few years now. Their non-conference strength of schedule just is never real good.
Well, and that's why when we get to this point in the year, I don't even look at overall stats. I look at conference only, because you don't know who they're playing midweek or preseason before conference starts. And so, yeah, I don't put a lot of stock in that. Now, we do know they're a good team and they can't swing it. Mm-hmm. And I think Tom even said it. You know, it's funny to think Wes Johnson being a pitching guy, but he seems to go out and recruit hitters.
Yeah.
I think he recruits guys, you know, that hit in that ballpark, you know, that are designed to hit in that Georgia ballpark. So I think that's the kind of player he brings in.
When I think of Georgia, I think of power arms and power bats.
Yeah.
I mean, that's if there's one word to describe Georgia, it's power.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of been the story for Wes throughout his career. Bubba, appreciate you being in here. You can listen to Bubba Tonight with Phil Elson on the Razorback Sports Network. Once again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto, proudly family-owned since 1976, trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. You can learn more or schedule service at hnrtireandauto.com. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. Hope to see you then, or at our website tonight to read about Arkansas, Georgia at wholehogsports.com.